noise comes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're getting things ready. You're getting into that fall attitude, bundling up, wearing sweaters. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to keep making these episodes. And oh boy, are we grateful. In exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, which you're going to want to look at this week, I think, and bonus content out your proverbial wazoo. Ladies and gentlemen, you get Feeling This. Two seasons of Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games. You get the podcast version of the DLC Book Club, where Lana Bashinsky and myself talk about the Malazan Books of the Fallen, and the Wednesday paid DLC program. Now, chock full of your comments, patrons get to interact with the show, tell us what they want to talk about every single week, all by supporting the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who has to tell me if he's a cop or else it's entrapment, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I am not a cop.
If you don't looking at the at the video version of the show, ladies and gentlemen, you're missing out on a sweet stash, bro.
Well, you can probably find a clip from this episode at youtube.com/@DLCpod, because we're putting some video clips on YouTube. It takes 10 years to start a social media presence. But yes, my Alan Wake beard is gone. I just have a mustache left that I kind of did as a gag. And then my wife said, I kind of like it, which to me meant keep it forever, never change a thing. And So now my entire personality is just mustache. That is all that I've replaced everything else with, mustache. And it's a pretty good personality so far.
Yeah. Well, it's better than what you had before, I guess.
Thank you. Hey, wait a minute. Hey.
Oh, we got lots of video games to get to, ladies and gentlemen. It is an amazing time of year. Stuff's happening. Stuff's coming out. We got tons of huge releases to talk about. We got news. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a lot. We're going to get through it all, but the good news is we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm excited, because once again, DLC stands for detonating large combustibles, because we have the host of the Giant Bomb Cast, our friend Jan Ochoa, is back with us. Hey, Jan.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Christian. Hello. Thank you for having me again, gentlemen. Jeff, has anyone ever told you that you'd probably have a fantastic career as like a wrestling promoter?
Oh, if only. Oh my gosh. Your lips to God's ears. I would in a heart, but I'd give it all up. I'd give it all up to be a wrestling promoter. That'd be amazing.
I would let you choke slam me through a table.
Oh, that is the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Jeff, if I ever see you in person and there's like a folding table nearby, I'm ready. This is an audio agreement right here.
I love choke slamming my young children onto the bed. So I feel like I'm practicing. I feel like I'm ready for that moment when you and I finally meet in person.
Really high for you.
Thank you.
Right now and say I'm not going to be a Jeff fan through his first 15 years of being a face. But after that 15 years, when he turns heel, I'll be in, and I'll buy all the merch, all the black t-shirts. So I'm ready.
I'm ready. I had a chance one time to meet Jimmy Hart in person. Ooh. We had the megaphone and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, that's the job I could have, right? It doesn't require any physical acumen at all. No, you know, there's a few times when he got, you know, clotheslined or something, but like once in a blue moon, most of the time he was just outside being loud. I could do that.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we're all built for that, you know, as podcasters.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's get into it and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, recommendations, whatever you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Alternatively, you could also reach out in one of our communities. We have a subreddit at 5x5dlc.reddit.com and a really awesome Discord with folks hanging out, talking about games and all sorts of other stuff. The Discord is also 5x5DLC on Discord. I urge you to take part. But Jan, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories.
Ooh.
What would you consider to be your story of the week?
This is a sad story of the week, unfortunately, but this story's kind of put a damper on what is otherwise a fantastic year for video games. The layoffs at Bungie, I think, may be the story of the week.
Yes. I mean, obviously, lots of layoffs. It seems like every week we're getting new layoffs. These, I think, hit people particularly hard because Bungie, you know, is one of those marquee developers that seems to be above the fray in a large sense. And turns out, no. And we got a lot of reporting around this that, you know, it didn't go down. If you believe the reporting, it did not go down in a very humane, respectful way, which is very, very sad to hear. But this was it impacted a lot of Bungie employees. It impacted a lot of employees that have been with the company for many years, some well over a decade and a half. And it kind of happened out of the blue right before the new month turned over, October 30th. Some folks were unceremoniously dumped. And, you know, this has been the reality this year and last year that we keep seeing these huge layoffs. This comes, you know, very closely after Bungie was acquired by Sony for $3.6 billion last year. And Sony also had layoffs just recently with Media Molecule, another first party, and at Naughty Dog as well. So, Jen, what is your take on what this means for the industry and Bungie specifically?
I think, you know, we're currently, and we've talked about this a lot on the Giant Bombcast as well. It feels like a manufactured problem that folks at the top have been creating, despite having record sales across the board. You know, video games doing the biggest numbers they've done in years, we're still laying off people at the bottom line while folks at the top are, you know, skirting past the responsibility. It's very unfortunate, and it just makes me really sad. Also, just the response from folks at Bungie almost kind of putting the onus on the players of like, well, Destiny 2 started waning. Maybe it's y'all's fault that we had to lay people off.
Yeah.
And just the general messaging to the public internally, you know, the reporting on what we've seen where the employees that didn't get laid off have been said like, oh, well, you know, you guys are the ones that we can really salvage the team. We can really salvage everything with. And I can't help but feel that those folks over there at Bungie that are still left and people that are left at various other studios that have experienced layoffs this year must be racked with some type of survivor's guilt where, you know, their peers, whether they've been able to meet them in person, work with them, people that they've been working with for decades, it seems, are now suddenly gone. Like we have the composer, longtime composer, Michael Salvatori being laid off. And he was a huge, huge part of Bungie throughout the years. And that seems absolutely wild. Yeah. I know having like a in-house composer may seem a little bit odd for like game development now, but when you have someone as helped create so many different themes for Bungie throughout the years. It does seem wild to let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. A community manager who'd been there for 15 years, Liana Rupert. She was also the co-lead of accessibility. The social media lead, associate franchise editor. There's a lot of longtime folks who were a big part of Bungie's successes over the years. And it sounds like they were sort of, they just woke up on Monday with meetings on the schedule where they found out they were fired. Turns out, they have 3 months severance, but which I guess is, the only silver lining here. But a lot of the team managers evidently weren't told who on the team was being laid off, and they found out as it happened. It was kind of sloppily done, or it seems sort of haphazardly done, if I can use that word. It's unfortunate. Obviously, our heart is with all those folks, and it seems to be this constant refrain in the video game industry, even as we're having this banner year as far as high-quality releases and successful releases. Christian, you and I have talked a lot about the trend of these games as services sort of collapsing under their own weight. I didn't think it would happen with Destiny. Destiny felt like it was a sure thing, but evidently even Destiny is vulnerable to this kind of thing. What is your take on how this went down?
Poorly is how it went down, I think, is my take. I don't think it was a good way that it went down. I struggle with the have your cake and eat it too approach that companies seem to take with we are family. And if we all just, we got to get through this crunch. I'm using a generic example here, but this is a tough time. We got to tighten the belt. But Jan and Jeff, if we just pull through this together, because we believe in each other, we're the right people for this and we can do it and we'll come through this on the better and brighter. And once we get this X product out, everything is going to be great. And because, we've got each other's back through thick and thin, then cut to X number of months later. Jan and Jeff, you're being let go. It is nothing personal. Just the revenue numbers weren't what they need them to be on a spreadsheet. You're the people that are expendable. Look, we're just a collection of numbers on a spreadsheet. None of us are family. It's like this. It's grotesque. Yeah. It's grotesque. And I'm making a flippant joke about it, but it's grotesque. And I think far too often the companies prey on a communal feeling and abuse that relationship to overwork individuals and not think of them as human beings when the time comes to make cuts. And the way it sounds like these things happened at Bungie was poor in messaging and in the delivery. And I don't think Bungie's official statement when it came out was great either. As Jan mentioned, we've got the core team now. It's going to turn this around. And another part to this story that frustrates me is the reporting that this happened because Destiny missed its targets, its financial projections by 45% is the number I saw going around.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem like that was the community manager's fault. I don't think any amount of community management gets you 45% more golden hens, or whatever it is, golden geese. And it sucks, Jeff. I wish I had a silver bullet to pierce this and fix it, but it sucks. And I don't know what the path forward is. I'm happy to see unionization at Disney's VFX houses. That is also an industry that is computer based, programming based often, and full of layoffs. And we've talked about it on this show a bunch. I would like to see unions come to the games industry in a big way. And I know, Jeff, you and I stand strong with SAG-AFTRA as we are still on strike.
Indeed.
As a union. So,
yeah, Jan, I'm curious what your take is on the sort of bigger context of all this. I mean, obviously, this has been a thing that was been recurring throughout the year and throughout the last few years, is these massive layoffs over and over and over again. And, you know, it feels like we're, you know, we're on that party on the balcony and we're like, this party's amazing. Look at all the cool stuff on this. Look at that band and this band. Oh, this is incredible. While like underneath the balcony, like the foundation is crumbling, or, you know, it's a terrible analogy, but you know what I'm saying? That this idea that here we are celebrating, I think, one of, if not the most impressive year of all time for video game releases.
Mm-hmm.
And what's right around the corner are, you know, these companies are kind of, you know, rotting away from the inside in a sense. Do you share that view, or do you think there's a rosier take?
I'd like to see both sides, right? Where I think a lot of the corporate decisions have kind of created the rot where, you know, we're chasing trends that don't need to be chased, right? Putting all of our eggs in the games as a service basket when it turns out the general gaming audience is straying away from that. I do agree with Christian. I think something like unionization should definitely be brought to the video games industry just for general worker protection. I mean, we have folks that move across the country, across the world, even to work at a specific studio, maybe a dream studio that they want to work for. And especially, you know, I was under the assumption with Bungie being bought out by Sony that they would have like some type of protection, some safety underneath that Sony umbrella that has kind of hasn't faced as many layoffs compared to other places in the industry. So I definitely think the gaming industry as a whole is on the cusp of realizing, as we are on this rooftop party, that things aren't so great, that maybe the music's a little too loud. We got to go back inside, and maybe that band isn't that great. Maybe I don't like ska. It's all right. That's okay.
Whoa. Okay. Now,
as a hypothetical.
Okay, got it. I'm back.
Yeah. Thank you for making my terrible analogy work.
Nonsense. It was a great analogy. But yeah, I think like as the gaming industry, and that includes games media and developers, publishers, folks working across the board need to band together, because otherwise what is going to happen? Who's going to continue making these games other than people that are being cruelly exploited?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. It's the best of times, worst of times kind of situation.
Right. And we have a year where, like, I have said this multiple times across the internet, some of my favorite games of all time have come out this year.
Yeah.
And it just stinks that there are folks hurting from this year, from an amazing year in games.
Yeah, agreed.
And I don't want to say AI is the answer, because I think to some people that is, like, how do you keep costs down as all this stuff is rising? But I do, and I don't have the answer, but I do wonder how you kind of avoid this even cyclical style approach of, well, I don't need a staff of 1,000 right now because we're brainstorming. I don't need an in-house composer, for example, right now, because we're 18 months out away from needing a score. But I feel like there has to be some other way of this staff up, cut staff. And I think the way the movie industry did it is that all those talents unionized, those different groups, because you do see that once the studio system collapsed, you would see, oh, you staff up and you get this director, this producer, this grip, this, you know, all of this crew. And then they work this project and then they all disband and then they come up to another one. And I don't know if there's a model like that in gaming. Gaming right now very much is the studio system, you know, not an exact parallel, Jeff, to how the movies world was the studio system. But I feel like there has to be some learning in a way that can make it livable and kind and decent to folks, while also understanding the quote unquote business reality that no game needs 10,000 people or 5 studios across the world or whatever a Ubisoft game is when you're going, what's our game going to be? And I don't know how those two meet, but I feel like there has to be a solution.
Yeah, agreed. Well, like we said, you know, our heart goes out to the folks that were affected. If you read some of the comments from some of the folks that got laid off, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, it keeps happening over and over. So hopefully there's a way out. Christian, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is a precursor to layoffs. No, I don't know. My story of the week is an acquisition, which is usually the 36-month precursor to layoffs. I hope not. But Atari, which this is, so I'll say the headline. Atari is acquiring Digital Eclipse. And said as a statement in and of itself, I think that makes sense that people can wrap their head around. But what maybe doesn't make as much sense is what Atari is right now.
The hotel company?
No, the Bluetooth hat company.
Oh, those guys. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Atari. Because Atari's been a million things over the last half a week, it feels like, the last decade or so. But the brand's been sold. I think an apparel part was sold off to use the brand just for apparel. That's different, which is where that speaker hat came from. And then they came back into a core gaming thing. And Digital Eclipse, on the other side of things, has been making banger retro re-releases for a very long time now. They did the more recent Atari collection that was a celebration of all things Atari and had really cool like vid docs included and like a library and really, really awesome presentation. And I think they worked on the System Shock remake. Pretty much everything Digital Eclipse has touched, especially recently, has been very top tier in terms of these re-releases and remasters or whatever you want to call them. And I'm very curious, Jan, kind of your thoughts on what Atari buying a company means, maybe for Atari more so than Digital Eclipse.
You know, I think this can finally give Atari a modern identity by acquiring Digital Eclipse, who's made a name for themselves lately about remaking old games. So they're redefining themselves by making what is old new again. Because in my head, I've always thought of Atari as like the retro studio, right?
Yeah.
And never really had any context for that. But now they kind of are the retro studio by remaking all of these older games. I personally, one of the things that Digital Eclipse has worked on, really, really absolutely adore the Cowabunga collection. So if we can get more stuff like that, like celebrations of games, like a shot in the arm of something older and just modernize it just a little bit, I'm all for that. Especially if, you know, this seems like a proper strategy that Atari should go down versus making speaker hats or hotels.
I don't know, man. I think they should stay in the speaker hat business. We're just weeks away from that really taking off, you guys. You know, we laugh, but when everybody's walking around with speaker hats and you don't have one, you're going to be pretty upset.
2040 anyway. People will make fun of VR and be like, you wore goggles on your heads. No, it's speakers on your hat. That's what it is.
So Atari also acquired Night Dive Studios, which are the folks that did the System Shock remake.
Oh yeah, they did System Shock. That's right. Yes, thank you.
And you know, the Disney Classic Games collection Digital Eclipse, the Cowabunga collection. So it does feel like they are focusing. I think, Jan, you hit the nail on the head that like they're figuring out this identity for themselves by acquiring people that have been doing the stuff that you hear the word Atari and you feel like, oh yeah, they should be the people that like specialize in retro awesomeness. And it's like, oh no, we'll go out and get the folks that are doing retro awesomeness and put them under our banner. And there you go. Now people know what Atari means. You know, as somebody that grew up in the 80s and had an Atari 2600 as my first gaming console, Atari, and just the logo of Atari, I mean, it's like a Hot Topic t-shirt, you know? It means something. It still has cachet in some sense. And I think this is the absolute right use of that IP, is to be the place where you can rely on awesome sort of retro experiences. And it does seem like that's what they're focusing in on. And I think that's really cool. Here's the quote from the Atari CEO, Wade Rosen. Digital Eclipse is the best in the world at what they do. They have a deep love and respect for the history of games and are renowned for developing critically acclaimed projects based on historic franchises. So it's like they're really explicitly saying it. Like we are historic franchises. They're awesome at making new games about historic franchises or sort of revitalizing them. It's a match made in heaven. And Digital Eclipse is even, you know, kind of on that same page. Digital Eclipse's FAQ on their website says, "We're a small studio with big dreams. Atari is a legendary publisher with a new spirit." That's cool. I love it. I'm rooting for Atari to sort of reclaim its mantle of, you know, industry relevance, really, which is it long, you know, long not had. So I think this is cool. And, you know, $20 million in the age of, you know, 79 billion or whatever it was, 60 billion, $20 million feels like a drop in the bucket. It's like, oh, cool. They're just kind of scrappy young upstarts, you know? So I think this is cool.
Yeah, it's the number sides of things I think are interesting in terms of you look at valuation, and this is a very cursory job of this, but like what money that they have coming in and what is their brand worth and how much are they struggling between gig to go out and find Disney or find the next thing to get the next project. And then now Atari coming in with this capital hopefully secures them, but it didn't seem like, again, it's tons, you know. But gives them that runway now to kind of transition into the next thing and hopefully not need to go, I imagine, negotiating the Disney license to pitch to bring that back. And then Nickelodeon with TMNT and Konami or whoever had these rights is tricky and expensive. And hopefully this gives them runway to keep doing that while still being profitable. And it's not the thing that wipes Atari out as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the... that's the dark cloud version of this.
I don't want to go back and listen to it. And dear audience, if you do, feel free to, you know, post it, the select quotes in our Discord. But I feel like when Embracer bought up studios, Jeff, I have to imagine you and I were like, they're going to save some studios that would otherwise under. Yeah. And it's like, Paul was like, yep.
We're getting a new Saints Row game. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
It's true. You have to acknowledge that that's been the pattern in some cases. So let's hope it doesn't happen here, because I think this is a potentially really cool way to sort of revitalize the history of games and the history of this, you know, this thing that mattered to me at a certain point in my life. Atari meant something. And, you know, it hasn't for a long time. So I think that's...
Speaker hats. Come on.
Speaker hats.
Yeah, thank you.
Speaker hats. All right. My story of the week is BlizzCon. BlizzCon. We had a BlizzCon this year. We haven't had a BlizzCon in a while. And I got to say, I think... I could be wrong. I think... time is a flat circle. But I think this is the first BlizzCon, other than when my son was born, that I have missed. And would probably be... more of a trend now because I live in Denver, but you know,
this is the 17th aside from the one my son was born, but now this is the 17th BlizzCon. Yeah, I want you to keep calling it out when
I used to, you know, I love going to BlizzCon. I've been many times, and was not there this year. This was a strange year for BlizzCon, obviously. You know, it there had been tumult with Blizzard and now this big acquisition by Microsoft. And so the fact that they were even having a BlizzCon at all is kind of interesting. And also Chris Metzen coming back to the company. We talked about several weeks ago when that was announced. So this was kind of an interesting BlizzCon. And I think made some interesting news because not only did we get Diablo 4 expansion announcement coming in late 2024 with a new class that they have not yet revealed, but is evidently not just a class that we've seen before in the franchise, but a completely new class. That's pretty cool. We got a new character for Overwatch. We got a new Hearthstone expansion, but and a new WoW Classic is going to get Cataclysm. The old Cataclysm expansion is coming to WoW Classic. Very interesting stuff across the board. But for my money, as somebody that loves World of Warcraft and has loved World of Warcraft for well over a decade, the fact that we get not one, but three World of Warcraft expansion announcements, they're grouping them now as a trilogy of expansions, that are going to tell one large narrative. They're calling it the World Soul Saga. And the first of these expansions is coming in 2024. It is going to be called The War Within, which will evidently be taking place subterraneously under the surface of Azeroth, hence the war within and the soul of the world, literally going inside the world. And then the next two expansions are called Midnight, which is interesting. And then the last one is called The Last Titan. So we don't know when those are slated or what they will include, but it's the first time they've announced three expansions at once. And the fact that these are grouped together in one big story is kind of interesting. Lots of, you know, nitty gritty granular details about what this first War Within expansion will feature as far as new, you know, things to do and stuff, which is all interesting to me as a WoW fan. But I think on a meta level, on a macro level, Gian, I'm curious, we just got done talking about Destiny 2 and games as service and the sort of waning of them. And, you know, WoW has gone through its peaks and valleys and lots of more valleys recently than peaks. What do you make of this quite old franchise that still costs $15 a month to play? Talking about three expansions, talking about really trying to revitalize that community. Do you think WoW's time has passed, or do you think this is a way for this game to be even more relevant?
I think it's definitely a path forward to relevancy again. It's really astonishing and heartwarming to see a behemoth like WoW to continue to keep going. Maybe not necessarily growing, but at least it can recapture some of the audience that may have lapsed, you know? I am all for MMOs continuing to be like a silent storm brewing in the background of AAA games, battle royales releasing. Like, we have World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy 14 still pulling strong. There's a Lord of the Rings MMO as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then I think there is still at least a couple hundred folks still playing EverQuest 2 out there. So as long as those people are still around, but also, you know, folks, the children, the youth, I hear, are starting to play WoW. Like, there's something about it to them where it feels retro, and it feels insulting to say that WoW feels retro, but there's an odd appeal to it, because these young gamers have grown up with something like an Animal Crossing, Stardew Valley, something very systems heavy, and they see the carrot in the loop, or a carrot on the stick with World of Warcraft. My partner is a teacher, and she was flabbergasted to hear her students, freshmen in college, mind you, or freshmen in high school, mind you, to talk about World of Warcraft.
It's the 90s. Too. Go for it. You know, like that. It's.
I remember playing WoW on my Atari 2600.
While you were wearing your speaker hat.
My speaker hat. Yeah. That's heartening. I'm actually kind of excited to hear that the kids are, you know, the kids are thinking about WoW in any way at all. I think gone are the days of, you know, 12, 14, 16 million monthly subscribers. I don't know if they're ever going to recapture that kind of heyday, but there were some rumors swirling before this BlizzCon, because there was all this sort of percolating excitement about this being a really big deal BlizzCon as far as announcements go. And I think that has borne out. But I think some people were suggesting that they might be phasing out WoW and maybe doing sort of a World of Warcraft 2 or whatever the next big thing was. And this could not be farther from that, right? This is like, we have three expansions planned. We're all in on WoW still. You know, this is still our flagship product. And I'm genuinely surprised by that. And I'm rooting for it, right? I'm back in that. I know, Christian, I know you still have a lot of issues with management at the top, and I certainly can sympathize with that. But as somebody that deeply cares about this game and has been such a big part of my life in many, you know, intermittently, right? Not constant. I'm not a constant WoW subscriber, but intermittently it has been a huge part of my life over many, many years. And I'm kind of excited about some of these features that they're talking about, and this grand idea of like, we're elevating this to a size and scale. You know, Metzen got on stage and said, this is the culmination of the first 20 years of our storytelling and will vector us into the next 20 years of adventure. So they're talking about it in grandiose terms. I'm curious, Christian, what you might think about it.
Well, I want to rewind back a little bit too to the beginning of BlizzCon with Phil taking the stage, having a P. Diddy moment.
He walked out and went, I own all of this.
It I mean, again, it's the 90s, go for it. It felt very P. Diddy, you know, like I am the producer. I'm having my moment in the sun. And it's like, I know that was a Will Smith riff, but you get what I'm saying. And just this big moment that set BlizzCon apart from other BlizzCons. It is Xbox presents BlizzCon now. And I wonder, Jeff, my question back to you, with my way of not answering your question, is 2024 or 2025, when these expansions come out, are they free with Game Pass?
Wow.
I mean, Riot already gives you tons of stuff free with Game Pass, and Microsoft doesn't own Riot. You know, if you want to play a Riot game, in my humble opinion, who is not, I fell off Valorant because I sucked. love the world.
I believe you were pushed off of Valorant repeatedly. And you're like, I want to play.
I want to play. And they're like, thump your dead. I'm like, okay. Cool. But the best way to play Riot games, again, my opinion, someone pushed off, is through Game Pass. Like the amount of value you get through that sub of a company Microsoft does not own. I have to guess that they're going to incentivize Game Pass Ultimate if it's not on console by then when this stuff rolls around, right? Question mark?
Go ahead, Jen. Sorry to pop in.
No, please.
Final Fantasy XIV proves that you can have an MMO run perfectly fine on console and play it with a controller versus mouse and keyboard. I'm sure that the folks at WoW have try to adopt that, and I mean, we saw the hubbub of this week of Modern Warfare 3 popping onto Xboxes nationwide with a huge advertisement. What if that just includes WoW down the line?
That would be wild. I'm curious, Christian, if your vision for this is the expansions themselves are part of Game Pass, but you still have to pay the $15 a month to play WoW. Or if it's all included.
I'm pitching all included at some point for Game Pass Ultimate or whatever they call it. I do think maybe this was a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was a Wednesday show. We talked about it. At some point, we talked about like Game Pass stratifying, splintering a little bit more, and kind of like Game Pass Core. They use the Game Pass term for what used to be Xbox Live Gold. And so I could see further diversification of what they call it. But I have to imagine, and this isn't our prediction episode, so I'm allowed to get it wrong when I just pull crap out of my butt right now. But I have to imagine that there's a world where, or a tier where all of that Blizzard monthly sub is rolled. And maybe it will be a $30 or $25, like, you know, it's like $5 cheaper than doing both kind of thing. But there's a world where you get all of it.
That's interesting. I'd be curious. I don't know. They certainly, as much as WoW has ebbed and flowed over the decades at this point, they have never really, I mean, they've added that sort of free to play first, whatever it is, 10, 20 levels, whatever it is that's free to play. They added that, but they've never faltered on like, this is the price to play this every month. And I think that would be a pretty bold move if all of a sudden it was folded into some larger subscription. I mean, I would be excited about that. I could see a situation where you still have to pay to play the game monthly, but the actual sort of, you know, expansions themselves are part of the PC plan or something. I think there's probably a lot of discussion at Microsoft right now about that. You know, we saw the announcement right away of like, hey, don't think that Call of Duty or Diablo 4 are going to come to Game Pass tomorrow just because we closed this deal. You know, we saw that happen. It's like, we got to figure this out. So I'm curious. I'm sure there's a lot of discussion about all that stuff, but you know, it's wild to me that you have a product that's been around this long, you know, as Metzen says, 20 years. And, they're talking about the next 20 years. Like, can you imagine a video game that you could play consistently for 40 years? That just seems wild to me. That's,
I mean, Rockstar has, it's called Grand Theft Auto 5, and they're over 10 years into that. whatever point they are.
Yeah. They're doing a sequel, right?
Maybe
Blizzard ain't, you know, I don't know. It's pretty exciting. I thought this some of the stuff in BlizzCon was pretty cool. And clearly, you know, they're all in on WoW. And I heard no mention of Heroes of the Storm. But that's my single tear goes down my cheek. All right. Well, we got a lot of games to get to, so let's do it. But first, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Uncommon Goods. If you want to hear, hey, where'd you get that this holiday season? Ha ha! Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your secret Santa or for your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. Christian, I know that you were a fan of Uncommon Goods for a long time now, right?
Yeah, well before they were sponsoring this show, we used it for gifts for my kids for birthdays. So one we did recently is it's a poster, National Park poster. And you can have it customized so it has their name on it and everything. And it's awesome. So, you know, like those, like a lotto scratch off kind of thing, or when you get like a gift card, you have to scratch the silver part off to see the barcode. So it's that. It's this awesome poster with those scratch offs, like that silver scratch off stuff of really cool art of all of the national parks in the United States. And then when you visit them.
Mark when you've been there.
Yes. And then you scratch it off and it's this beautiful cartoon, now colored version of the image. Really, really cool, customized, super special, unique. It's kind of a have it forever, you know, kind of thing as you check these things off the list. Really great. And then my wife also used them a couple months ago for a gift. She had a colleague who was moving to a different location. And so they had like a big going away party. And guess who showed up with like the gift of the party? My wife. Where'd you get it? Uncommon Goods. It really is that thing that's like special, unique, feels cool. Other people are like, oh, we have the same thing that we all saw you know, at the store.
And I you got a gift special. Card to Starbucks.
Right. Yeah. And this feels personal and really cool.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses, which is awesome. And the products are made often in small batches. So you want to buy, you know, you want to get there quickly before they sell out. Because Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality and unique and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere, from art to jewelry to kitchen and home and bar. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. And every purchase made at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date. So, to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/DLC. That's uncommongoods.com/DLC for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. And talk about the games we have been playing in the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? We have some of the biggest games of the year having dropped. I mean, it's November, right? November is traditionally the time. But I feel like there's been huge games all year long in this 2023. I don't know if anybody – I guess people had this marked on their calendars. Alan Wake 2 is a big deal. But, Jan, I feel like it has exceeded people's expectations.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I thought the first half of this year was very loaded with banger after banger. I thought I was honestly done for the year after Tears of the Kingdom dropped. but then the year kept going, and so did the game releases. And just a bunch of gems across the board. Just wrapped Spider-Man 2. Absolutely adored it. Big Marvel head, and that kind of got the blood going into thinking the possibilities of Marvel outside of the MCU. Really juiced about that, but like Alan Wake 2, oh my gosh, not on my radar at all. I only played an hour of the first one because I was too scared as a kid. absolutely adored Control, but this is extremely my jam. It despite being a very dour and scary game, I can't help but smile. And I don't know what that says about me as a person. But
we don't need to go into that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. But it just speaks to me on so many levels, as a fan of video games and like the medium of video games, but also as like a creative and also someone that just enjoys movies and cinema. This game is doing stuff that a lot of other games I don't think I've ever thought to try. I don't want to spoil anything, but in Alan Wake's campaign, Chapter 4, I was left awestruck. I see Christian pumping his fists, and it's just something that...
it's up there with what they did in Control. There's a level in Control that it was like, there's never been, there's never going to be a video game level like this. And then Remedy was like, no, we got you. We can do it again. And I was like, you did it. You dang jerks did it.
And if anyone is in my similar shoes as mine, where you may not have checked out Alan Wake 1 or you've only checked out a couple other Remedy games, I think Alan Wake 2 does a fantastic job at onboarding the player through the lens of Saga, one of the other characters, and learning the whole rich lore of this huge Remedy verse that they are creating over there. It's great. Absolutely adorable. I also feel attacked personally because they kind of call out drinking an insane amount of coffee. And that's something that I do.
It's a horror game. What's the horror? Too much coffee. Yeah, I'm a scaredy pants, and I guess I gotta just talk myself into revisiting this game, because I played about 2 hours of it, and it kept yelling at me. Like it would I would be playing it, and I'd be like, okay, well, I gotta get the clues, and then it would scream at me, and a face would show up, and I would be like, I don't want to feel that. I don't like being yelled at. Please stop. And it wouldn't, so I stopped. But I guess I gotta talk myself into getting back on board, because my poor nerves were not handling it well. But everyone says it's so amazing. I don't believe Christian when he says it, but you, Jan, telling me it's amazing, I believe.
Yeah, it's also a visually stunning game, and like,
that's true. Yes,
in a year where we've had stunning game after stunning game, this looks absolutely fantastic, and it's scary. I almost went and bought like a really nice flashlight after this game. I'm just like, I'll just go to the PNW.
One of those flashlights that you can like push harder, and it like shoots, it shines brighter for just a little while, but it really uses up your batteries when you do that.
Right. Yeah. And just keeping a bunch of, they look like D batteries in the game. Just keeping those on my person.
Yeah. Yeah, you know how flashlights will do that, where you have on, and then you have like really on.
It's like those old shake flashlights from the early 2000s. You just believe a little bit more and it'll shine brighter.
That's right. You use that flashlight with your speaker hat. That's my understanding. Yeah. Yeah. Christian, I know you've been singing this game's praises for a while. I should also note, folks, if you're not a patron, we dropped a bonus episode talking to an evangelist at NVIDIA, specifically about the way they have worked with Remedy to make Alan Wake so spectacular on PC. And that has already dropped for patrons and will drop in the main feed this week, Christian?
We had Jacob Freeman on from NVIDIA, and it's, I think, this week in the main feed. It's a really cool chat about DLSS 3.5 broadly and Reflex and stuff like that, but then also specifically on Alan Wake 2. Really, really fascinating.
Cool stuff.
Cool conversation.
And you have more to say, I'm sure.
So last week I had not quite rolled credits because of when codes come in and timing and life and stuff like that. I have now rolled credits on Alan Wake 2. And I only now further believe that it is one of the finest video game experiences I've ever had. I mean, maybe even media experience I've ever had. I've sung the praises of interactive media before about why I think it oftentimes at its best can stand head and shoulders above non-interactive media, traditional media. And I think Alan Wake uses the medium so effectively and to create a story that can only exist in video games, or certainly best exist in video games, by having you be playing and controlling these characters. And a few things I wanted to point out from last week's that I didn't specifically call out. We do have that conversation with Jacob for patrons now, but I have not played this game on console. Digital Foundry tells me it's great and it runs great, but my God, on PC, on a beefy GPU, I have a 4080. I mean, just stunning, just absolutely stunning. So a console, it might be just as stunning. I don't know, but the hair effects I want to call out specifically. Saga's hair is incredible. Alan's hair is incredible. And these are long haired people. Alex Casey mm-hmm. has more traditional video game hair because, spoiler, he's the face of Max Payne. Not actually a spoiler, just Sam Lake. So Sam Lake's face has been on video games for a while and he has video game hair. Alan Wake and Alan Wake 2.
Must be hard for him to just keep video game hair because he keeps putting his face in video games.
Yeah,
well, I can't change the hair.
He can't.
He's gimmicked up. He can't put it away now. That's right.
People know me as this hair. but Saga's hair in this world of light and darkness, and Alan's hair, and there are areas where there's film projection happening across them and over them is phenomenal. And while this game still relies on combat as a core loop mechanic of the game, I was constantly surprised how little combat there is in the grand scheme of things, and still how interesting the game is. There is an underlying tension that the world creates, I think because of its use of flashlight and light and darkness, where I'm playing this game, and I truly don't know if Remedy designed it this way or not, but there are things in game that when your light hits, it looks like a person, just like in the real world, you start freaking yourself out when you just uh-huh. came home from seeing Smile in theaters, your family's asleep, you walk in and your light from outside hits the door jam just right. You're like, it's just a light. It's cool. And Alan Wake 2 does that through the graphical tech and the lighting schemes they've designed in this game, where I just loved being in the world, and far more often than not, I'm not engaged in combat. And I found that super rewarding. And on top of that, so much of the game uses what I would call, I'm sure I'm not coining this, but dream logic, because you're in this dark place as established in Alan Wake before. And I can't imagine what level design, you know, what that map looks like, where it's like, go through the same door 5 times. And on the 6th time you go through the same door, but it's a different door and it connects to this. You look at the map and it's just, that's here and this is there and that's there. And in the moment it all makes sense, but it feels like a dream. And it is just, one of the best experiences I've ever had. It is spooky, Jeff. I'm not going to lie to you and say it's mm-hmm. not, or that they stopped doing that. They don't stop doing that. The game is scary. The game is tense, but I think it is a very different type of scary than Dead Space and even than Resident Evil. It's less grotesque than Dead Space, certainly. And Dead Space, there's a lot more combat, in my opinion. And in Resident Evil, there's way more combat. And in Alan Wake 2, there's a lot more of just atmosphere in what it delivers. And the last point I'll make, Jan, to you specifically, is as someone who is deeply knowledgeable, I would argue, of Remedy lore and everything, I still don't know what happened in Alan Wake 2. You know, like you can come into it new, you can come into it experienced, and it makes the same amount of sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's probably some of the best use of FMV in a game ever, other than like a purely FMV game. I think this takes... I can't wait to see the design doc, like you mentioned, Christian, for some of those levels that do feel like a loop. And like, I've been here 5 times, but I think I'm still going the right way. And just a lot of fun little Easter eggs scattered across. I feel like I'm very close to the credits. And I just don't want to leave the world.
Wow.
Fantastic music as well. Which I understand carried over from, Alan Wake 1, but a lot of great, great tunes in this one.
The Very end cool. is really nice. Also, it sticks it, in my opinion,
that's
sticks
great it
in a way that fits, you know, the genre and the great, like there's often great stories and you finish it and you're like, it's over. Alan Wake 2, in my opinion, very much sticks its landing and is great up until the end. And my total play time was 21 hours and change based on the save data for folks interested.
I'm happy that Alan Wake and Remedy is kind of joining the greater pantheon of horror games, because now I think of it up there with Resident Evil, up with Dead Space. Silent Hill, that's a different roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't ever put the first Alan Wake as a horror game. You know, it really felt more like a thriller or a, you know, sort of a creepy, but mostly not really a horror game. And it seems like they've really embraced that, to my chagrin, but to people's delight. Christian, what else is on your playlist?
It's been too long since I've done my Apple Arcade call out. I wrote this past Friday's newsletter, tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. I wrote about subscription services in general. And one subscription service that I have kept is Apple, because they have bundled me into necessity of like iCloud and Apple TV Plus and Apple Arcade and fitness. And, you know, they took the blood straight out of my vein and they keep it that way. But because I have it, calling out NBA 2K24 Arcade Edition. They've been doing these NBA 2K games as part of Apple Arcade since 22, maybe 21. It's fantastic. I am going to qualify this, but at the same time, I am going to say this is the best version of NBA 2K24 available. It plays phenomenally with a controller. You can play it on your iPad or on your phone. I play it on my phone at the Backbone. They've added more of the My Career stuff, or create a player, build a player, run a player through the whole thingamabobby that was kind of missing from the first iteration of it. And while it is not the prettiest or the most feature complete version of the game, the reason why I will die on the hill of saying that it is the best version of NBA 2K24 is because it's on Apple Arcade. There's nothing, no microtransactions, none of that. Spend a currency to get the thing, to go to the barbershop, to get the haircut that lets you then buy the Jordans. If you don't want to do that, you can spend $5 to get this and 10 more credits to do that. Yes, there's still currency loops and carrots on sticks to pull you back in. But the whole game's there. And I have loved these 2K games for a very long time. I think going back to maybe the PS4 launch, Jeff, was when I spent too much time talking about it way back then. And this game has gotten graphically better now, this Apple Arcade version. And as the microtransactions have crept up in the main console version, having this version on my phone or iPad or whatever is awesome. I'm curious for folks that are hardcore into that, managing a team or managing a season or grinding a player through, if they'll find as much to like it as I do. But for my money, i.e. my subscription service, it is the best version of NBA 2K24. And if you have Apple Arcade and you've slept on it, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I bet there's something in there that you'll really love. It's great.
You're gonna die on that Grant Hill. Hey. See what I did there?
Bravo. Did? Bravo. Bravo. Hey.
You could have brought AI into the conversation, but I guess we already talked about AI earlier in this episode. Am I right? Am I
right? I gotta check that out. I have not tried it. I have an Apple Arcade subscription as well. By the way, you know, we talked about Wonderbox being a great Apple Arcade game eons Love ago. My son is obsessed with Wonderbox. He plays it on my iPad. And what he does is he makes levels. He's like, "Daddy, I made you a level. It's so hard. Can you beat it? Watch. Here, hand it to me. I can show you how to beat it." He's making levels with it. And that game is rad. So anyway, quick shout out to Wonderbox.
Well, I'll continue the Apple Arcade shout out. They had an announcement just last week. Yeah, it was between shows, but a new 3D Sonic game is coming to Apple Arcade,
right.
Exclusively. Yeah. Sonic Dreams, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
And then Disney Dreamlight Valley is coming to Apple Arcade as well, which it won't cross save with your existing game, I believe, but it also doesn't have microtransactions. And so if you have someone who's interested in that game, it kind of seems like the way to play it. The only asterisk on the end of that I would add is that it does require a newer iPad than a lot of, at least my family, you have as kind of like
the trashy kid iPads.
The kid iPad.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hit for
a lot of folks. That is a solid farming building type of game. Definitely. Yeah. I think that's going to do gangbusters for Apple Arcade. And I just looked. I also have a subscription to Apple Arcade that I forgot about.
You get the Apple One, you know, the whole thing. You get it. It's there. It's like, yeah. I want Apple TV and I want Apple Music. And okay, I'll take Apple Arcade. Why not? You're giving it to me anyway. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then the last game, I hope to talk about this more next week or so, but I got a code for Ghost Runner 2, and I loved Ghost Runner 1, really sang its praises when the first game came out. It was awesome. It's a first person, but precision platformer where you're, mirror's edging through a world, so to speak, navigating these complex levels. But there's actually combat that's enjoyable in Ghost Runner, and Ooh. You have your katana, and hey, you
Sick
know it's
burn
true.
On Mirror's you, Edge, baby.
You know it's true. I'm bringing the hotness back from 2005 with that Mirror's Edge burn. But it's one hit death, and then instant reload. There's actually an option. I forget if it was in one or not, but in Ghost Runner 2, where you can have it say not even show you the you died screen, like you die and you just immediately start back at the beginning of the loop.
Nice.
And it, I'm playing on PC. It also is gorgeous. The first game was gorgeous. This game has DLSS bells and whistles in it and ray
it's like
tracing.
That neon,
and
it's, like soaked, cool cyber ninja thing. Yeah.
It's very pretty. I am aware of a thing that happens about halfway through the game that changes it. Right now, I'm still very much in the beginning part of the game that feels similar to the first, has me doing things I was doing in the first game. I'm aware of something that changes. I have not gotten to that part yet. And then I've had several game crashing bugs. So I'm hoping there will be a patch that will help that, where I get some type of runtime, or I don't know, some error pops up. I haven't screenshotted. I've sent it off for hopefully helping get it fixed. But it pops up and then crashes, which for Ghost Runner 2, that style of game is kind of frustrating, where for the way I play, I beat my head against a wall over and over and over again until my fingers learn it and I kind of figure out the puzzle. And then to figure out the puzzle or be in the middle of an awesome run and then have it crash, crashes are always a bummer. But from what I've played, I really enjoy it. It's still beautiful, still a big fan of the franchise. And I hope next week or so I'll be able to get to that second half of the game and see what it brings new to the table.
Very cool. So that's Ghost Runner 2, NBA 2K24. And of course, we've been talking about Alan Wake 2. I have a couple of games on my playlist this week. My recurring theme is games that are hard to pronounce. Because the first game I want to talk about is called Jusson. Jusson. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. But there's actually a very charming I got a code for this game early. And there's a very charming little video they sent along with it where the developers are like, it's pronounced Jusson. But also, however you want to pronounce it is fine.
Fantastic.
So it's which was lovely. It is Jusant. So it looks like Jusant, but it's Jusant, which is a French word that means rising tide, I think. Anyway, this in a year, as we've mentioned, that is just overflowing with Game of the Year contenders, I put this in the discussion. It's a short game. It's an indie game. It's in that sort of like, you know, you could play this game in a sitting. I played it in two, I think. It's very short, but I don't think that should be a detriment these days. I think that's kind of a beautiful thing sometimes, is like this really wonderful game that you sit down. Let's put it this way. I played this game in less time than it took me to watch Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, okay.
It's about 3.5. This is about 3.5 hours, right? So you could probably take more time with it. The idea of Jusson is that it's this fantastical world, and you are literally climbing this tower of destroyed culture. It's these people that lived in and around the sea. But the sea has dried up and there's no rain, there's no moisture. And so they've disappeared or died off. You don't know. And you are this person with a rope and a backpack and this little creature. And you are going to ascend this giant tower that used to be, I think, underwater. That's the entire game. It's pure exploration. zero combat. It's a game where there's no violence whatsoever. It is just traversal, and the traversal is awesome. My only caveat is that I constantly was comparing the experience of playing Jusant with playing The Climb or The Climb 2, which are VR games that I very much enjoy that are basically the same thing. The Climb franchise is about climbing a structure. And because you're in VR, you're actually reaching out, grabbing hold of these ledges and things and pulling yourself up. And I actually went back and played The Climb some more after playing Jusant because I was like, I just want to remind myself what it was like to play The Climb. And I honestly think Jusant would be better if it was in VR. Like if I could physically be doing it, that's just my personal kink, you know. That's just, I'm a VR
which
guy.
Which you can add to every game Jeff talks about, by the way.
It's
every
true,
game
but in this one we have like a one-to-one comparison of like, what is a game about climbing? Well, is it better to use the triggers on your controller? No. It's better to literally reach your hand out and grab the ledge and pull yourself up. That's bet it's cooler. But I do think that they have managed to map the idea of climbing a structure to a controller in a pretty clever way. As I mentioned, it's basically the left trigger, and the game is like, play this with a controller, because I played it on PC. It's also available on Game Pass, I should mention. So you can check this game out. You can probably finish it, like I said, in one sitting or a couple sittings. So your left hand is one trigger, is the left trigger, and your right hand is the right trigger. And you always attach yourself with your little rope, and you've got I can't remember what they're called. Because of the P. Pylons, whatever they're called. Climbers will know. You have three of them that you can plunk into a wall at any point, which if you know anything about climbing, you know, like that's like the – it's a little hook that secures you and keeps you safe, right? So you're climbing. You're looking for handholds. You're climbing. You're trying to figure out how to climb left hand, right hand. And you can kind of time it so you're kind of going at a pace. You've got stamina. So if you take too long, your hands will get tired and you can slip off. But – there's no death. There's no falling, plummeting to your death. You're always hooked in. And depending on where you choose to put your little pinion, is that what they're called? The little hook thingies. Maybe it's the P. Anyway, wherever you stick those things in, like it's effectively a save point, right? Because the higher up you put, and you get to these, you know, you'll climb, and then pull yourself up to a full ledge and start exploring the like next level of the society that has been abandoned. But as you're climbing up, you can put the little hook in the wall and you're not going to fall any farther than that. You'll never fall farther than that. So it's like this really cool version of a save system or a you've gotten this far with some limitations because you only have three of those, right? Very clever. And you'll be, you know, you'll do some like some Nathan Drake type stuff too, where you're swinging.
Do those respawn or is it three for the game?
Yeah, every time you get to an actual platform or the next level of the society where you're walking around these abandoned houses and looking at stuff, you push the B button on the controller and you retract your rope. So you are taking your rope off that anchor point, and then all your little pinions or whatever they're called.
Pitons,
that sounds right.
There we go.
Thank you. Somebody looked it up. I appreciate you, Jan. Thank you.
Of course.
I should have looked it up before I started talking. But anyway, so yeah, those get replenished when you get to the next, and that happens fairly frequently. And I should mention that this is a fantastical world, and it is beautifully art designed. I love the art direction in this game. It is so beautiful, this abandoned world that you find like writings and journals that people have left, and you kind of get a sense of who the people that lived there were and what was going on. And there's a story that unfolds in your journey up this massive structure. But the structure itself has so much character and identity to it. Just the design of how these people lived, and there's sort of ropes and pulleys, and There's like barnacles on everything, and you know, stuff is broken, but like the design of this alien culture, it very much feels like an alien culture, is so beautiful. And just wandering around their little abandoned hovels, and you'll find a crevice and like go deeper into something and find a little, you know, like a prayer stone or like a little temple or something. And there's like moments of real beauty in the game. And you're constantly finding these shells that he'll blow into or listen to. And just hearing it will sort of give him a sense, your main character, give him a sense of the people that used to live there. You never see them. You never like get flashbacks or anything, but you're just picking up context clues from the way it's designed and how they used things. It's an exquisite game. It's really beautiful. And I love how it is, like its sensibility is pure exploration, not violent. I mean, it's, believe me, as I was kind of turning away from Alan Wake 2, I started playing Jusant and I was like, oh, this is more my speed. this makes me feel safe and happy. And yes, it's about an abandoned culture, but it's so beautiful. And it's just like pleasant and the colors are lovely. It's just, I love this game. It is really worth everybody playing. If you have a Game Pass subscription, please play Jusant. Like I said, it won't take you long, but I think this is an absolute gem of a video game experience. I loved it. I also want to tell you about another game. I don't know if I'm pronouncing correctly. This one's called Balatro, I think, or Balatro, or Balatro. I don't know. Balatro, whatever. This game is not out yet. There's only a demo. And I will tell you, folks, this game comes with a real warning. It will steal your life. Just the demo. It will, if you're like me, it will steal hours from you.
Sounds like you're describing Alan Wake again all of a sudden. This game has a warning. Do not.
Well, it's not because it's scary. It's not this is like one of those games where it's like, oh, this doesn't look like much. I'll just fiddle around with it. And then like you come out of a fugue state 3 hours later, like I've been playing for so long. I was recommended this game. People are calling it like the pure roguelite, like a pure, almost perfectly designed roguelite. And that's not wrong. This is poker. So already I've turned some people off. But it's poker as a roguelite, and it's done in this really fun aesthetic. At least I find the aesthetic very, very fun. It's almost like you're playing at a video poker machine, like from the 90s. It's kind of this pixel art video poker machine, and it's got a filter on it that looks like it's a CRT monitor. You know, it's got little glitches and like scan lines and stuff. But what you're doing in this game is you are making poker hand combinations, and each card in the deck has a value to it. And so the combined value gets filtered through a multiplier that you can manipulate. And so the inherent value of the cards that you are putting into a poker hand times the multiplier equals the amount of chips that you win per hand, okay? So you have these fights, I guess is the best way to put them, these confrontations between you and an opponent. They call them the big blind, the little blind, and then there's like boss blinds. And what you have to hit a minimum number of chips in a certain number of hands. So you're given a bunch of cards. You're given more cards than you would get in a poker hand. You're given, I think, 8 cards. I believe it's 8. And you start building poker hands. And you can discard cards to try to get better hands. And you start building – you build poker hands. You don't have to do 5-card hands. You can do – if you have a pair, you can just do 2 cards. Or you know, if you have 2 pair, you can just do 4 cards, whatever it is. If you want to do a straight or a flush, you need to do 5 cards. None of this sounds interesting, right? None of this sounds unique or cool, or the fact that it will like addict you like cocaine. It is
The genius of this game comes in the fact that you are able to manipulate this multiplier in really interesting ways. Because when you meet the minimum number of chips in a hand, you are awarded money, a payout. And it's like $4, $6. If you're really rocking, $8. But it's based on if you've done it in the fewest number of hands that you can in order to hit the minimum. So you're trying to do it. So you're trying to have these really powerhouse payout hands to have hands left over because you get money credit for the hands you didn't use. And then you take that money and you immediately go into a store. And that store lets you purchase a whole bunch of wild things that all of a sudden start giving you these builds in your roguelite run that get friends absolutely bonkers. And it is so fun. There's these jokers that you can have in play, and the jokers will add rules or break rules, as the case may be, that mess with your multiplier. So there'll be things like if you make a straight, your multiplier is bumped up by 5 or 15 or whatever. Or if you may have a flush, or if you do it, you know, have this, if you have odd numbered cards, like, you know, 3, 5, and 7 in your hand, then you get an extra multiplier or whatever. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, because things get nuts. And you have these other kinds of cards that let you do like sort of consumable cards that let you mess with your hands. There's packs that you can open that have a variety of things in them. And I mean, evidently just in the demo, there's like 150 jokers, different jokers that are available. And I think in the full release, they're planning to do like quadruple that or something insane. And you get to these crazy runs. Like I got this joker that was a glitched joker. So it was like, it looked all glitched and weird. So every time I made a hand, it would randomize the multiplier. So it would like add, maybe it added a 5 multiplier. Maybe it added 50 multiplier. It was just sort of like this crazy wacky thing. And you start building these incredible loadouts because you can only have, I think, 5 jokers in play at one time, and other cards, the consumables, you can have 2 at a time. And you start building these like wild loadouts. That really is sort of the essence of, in my opinion, what a roguelite is like, I've acquired these power-ups and now I'm building this Rube Goldberg machine of interplay between those power-ups so that it makes my playstyle do this certain thing that a different run I would never be able to do. So each run is this wildly different playstyle. That's what I love about roguelites, right? That's one of the things I love about them. And this is like that distilled and concentrated. And it is very addictive. I mean, if you're like me and you just love it, it's fast, it gets challenging, it's interesting. And so then you get these boss battles that you get into. They will have the boss has a debuff that can totally mess with you. And so you're like forced to have 5 card hands, or it'll be like, if you use any hearts in your hand, they don't count. Or it'll say, just wacky things that make you, you know, you have to, you don't get any discard. You can't discard a card for this entire fight. So you only get what you get. And now you're in trouble. I don't know if I'm doing a good job describing Balatro. I'm hooked on this game. It's okay, ridiculous. Jeff? It's ridiculous.
And I think the reason you were struggling to describe it is because I can see the reflection from your glasses. You're actively playing it.
I feel like is rude right
to
now.
Our listeners.
Yeah. This game is only a demo. It's not out yet. And it's so deep and so dense, and you could just keep playing it right now. They haven't said when that full game is coming out. But I don't usually just recommend demos to people. But if you like roguelites, you got to give Balatro a try. It is
It's crack. It's crack.
Is there an end?
Well, for the demo, there's an end. Yes. For the demo is you can only go up to ante 5, which I don't even want to explain what that means. But the you can only go so far in the demo. But you can keep doing new runs, and they're not any less fun. It's like there's no – you know, you play Hades or something to like
– Never heard of it.
Yeah. See where the story goes or find the – open up the next cool – but this is just infinite gameplay loop. It's just pure distilled strategy gameplay that never gets old, never gets it's wild how much they've managed to jam in the interplay between these cards, even in just a demo. It's, I don't know, it's pretty intense. It's pretty cool. And it's just like, it's one of those games where, you know, you play an Alan Wake 2 or a Spider-Man 2 or a Starfield or something, and you feel like, oh, I did something. This game is, I just wake up 3 hours later, I'm like, I've accomplished nothing. I've gotten no farther. I've experienced no new things. I just had this. It's like candy. It's like pure candy. Yeah. But I think it's pretty fun. It's pretty darn fun. I enjoy candy.
This seems very dangerous, because one of the similar games recommended on Steam is a game called Super Auto Pets, which, Jeff, I had a similar experience with it, where I lost weeks of my life because of it. And I'm going to blame you, Jeff, if I do fall into a deep hole with Balatro. Balatro?
I don't know. I don't know how it's pronounced, but it'll get you. Yeah, I never played that one, the Super Auto Pass.
Oh, stay far away, Jeff. Okay. Stay far, far away.
Duly noted. Duly noted. But if you, I don't know, have you heard of a game that came out early this year called Aces and Adventures?
I think I heard about it from you.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it. It also takes the poker hand as game mechanic idea, a very, very different approach. It's also sort of a roguelike, but it really created like an adventure game, like a role-playing game, but all your attacks are creating poker hands.
Oh.
Great game. Great game. Very different from this. But I love that here are two games that are basically card battlers using poker as the central mechanic, and just wildly different approaches. It's such a neat comparison, in my opinion.
More poker.
More poker. Yeah. I mean, that's the last thing I need in my life, I guess. But yeah. All right. So that's Jusson and Balatro, I think. I don't know how they pronounce them. All right. Let's we got a little extra time. Let's do a tabletop time. Jan, you've been playing a board game that I know is very popular these days. It's one of those ones that like crossed over from being a enthusiast hobbyist's board game to being real mainstream, like in Target, in Walmart. What have you been playing?
I've been playing Wingspan. And just like you said, Jeff, this popped onto mine and my partner's radar. And she's a big fan of playing Catan, however you're supposed to say it. And this is a very systems heavy board game with a lot of moving parts, not actually moving parts, but a bunch of eggs. and I don't want to dive too deep into it, but it is a very fun game where if you have ever appreciated a bird in your life, then this may be for you. If you've ever thought about birding, folks, this could be for you. Where you are laying eggs, placing down birds, in a lot of, I say moving parts, where it starts a lot of chain reactions as you keep going throughout the game. And this is one of those board games where it's very complicated to learn how to start, but once you get going, the strategies start quickly developing. The team behind Wingspan has put out a bunch of expansions at this point.
Yeah.
The neat thing about Wingspan, though, I forget the name of it, but there's a companion app where you scan the card that you place down, any of your bird cards, and it will play these specific bird calls for those birds. It's really cool. It's really cute.
Yeah.
It's very chill.
Bird calls. It's like everyone wants to learn bird calls, you know?
Yeah. And on each different bird card, and there's an obscene amount of birds, just like there are an obscene amount of jokers in Bellatro.
Yeah.
They all have fun little facts about the birds. And we caught ourselves saying, like, wait, is that a North American turkey over there on the side of the road? it's really neat. And also, you know, some board games can get a little dour or a little bit too serious, but this is a really fun one where it's appreciating a bunch of birds of different varieties and sizes.
Yeah, this is Wingspan. There's also a mobile version of yes. this game you can play if you don't want to get the actual cardboard version. But I have a funny story to tell you about Wingspan.
Oh, please.
You know, I recently moved here to Colorado, and you know, as one does, you sort of start making new friends. And I'm of the age and place in my life where I tend to make friends by meeting the parents of my kids' classmates, right? So you go to the school function and you meet the parents and you start becoming friends and then you start hanging out and you start getting to know each other a little better. Well, we have these, my son has a friend in one of his classes whose parents we really like, and we've been hanging out with them a bit. And, you know, they come over to my house and they see my obscenely large collection of board games. And they're like, oh, we like board games. And they're, what kind of board games do you like? I was like, oh, I like really, you know, really complicated ones. Like, oh my gosh. We went over to a friend's house and they played this game. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called Wingspan. And it's about birds. And we were like, what? They're like, we didn't understand how to play. And every time a new card came out, they insisted that we sit and like learn about birds. And we were so bored. And we were like, the game was so complicated. They're like, you don't play games like that, do you? And I was like, oh no. I was like, oh, if you think Wingspan is complicated, about 80% of my collection we can't play together. But it's very funny to me. But I think it's a delightful game. It really is fun.
Yeah, and it's neat because some board games, you know, you need 3 to 5 players. This you can play perfectly fine, just you and one other person.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a great game. Wingspan, again, if you want to check it out, I believe there might be even a free demo. I know there's a great iPad version of Wingspan, but you can find it pretty much anywhere. And Christian, I know you've been playing some board games recently as well, right?
The first one I want to talk about is a game everybody's heard about, Jenga. Nothing special about Jenga, but Jenga, like Uno, they've iterated a million different versions of Jenga, or tried to. And so the one that has made an addition to our family is Giant Jenga. I highly recommend Giant Jenga. It's still just Jenga, but it's giant. And there is something.
There's some way to know that.
It's in the name, right? Like they're not hiding the ball. So I'm not going to. Jenga, you move a block, put a block, the whole thing crumbles. But I actually want.
This one's so big that if it crumbles, it'll crush you.
Jeff, yes, that's where I'm getting. That is 100% it, my friend. I want a gianter Jenga, not for like the cleaning up purposes, but there's something, in my opinion.
Physically harmful Jenga.
Yes. Yes.
Danger, like, Jenga.
If Saw 11 was Saw 11 colon Jenga, I'm buying it, man. Right? That's what I want. There is something, in my opinion,
cinder block Jenga.
As long as you set it up for me. Yes, please. You know, there is something, in my opinion, more satisfying about giant Jenga than regular Jenga, because when it falls, it's bigger. It makes a bigger noise. Like, my youngest is afraid of it, like pinching her fingers. It won't. It's not that giant. It's not, you know, that giant. But I think playing it outside, you know, you'll probably see this at campsites if you go camping, or, you know, stay in some rustic type cabin thing and you dig through their games. I bet there'll be a giant Jenga by the fire pit or something like that, which, you know, you get cold, you throw a giant Jenga log and you get 10 more hours of more fire. But I really do think that this is the best version of Jenga, from how the size changes, the physics manipulation of it, and then just having this thing that seems like there's more stakes to it because it's bigger, it's more substantial. I don't need to spend tons of time on it, but if Jenga's universally fun, and giant Jenga is universally giant more fun.
You also may have a leg up on the kids then because of the height advantage you have.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See, now you're just putting actual work at the bottom.
They're stuck working on the bottom layers, the fragile bottom layers.
Yeah, I want to buy Jenga colon your kids can't reach the top, which is also known as Jenga colon dad wins, which I'm a big fan of. Dad wins Jenga. Giant Jenga, it's great. Again, it's Jenga, but giant. The second game, I don't think we've talked about this on the show ever, Jeff. It's called Ice Cool. I think it won a bunch of Dice Tower Family Game Awards back in the day. There is an Ice Cool 2, which is fine. I prefer the original. The sequel adds you can like move some stuff around. But a game we have talked about on this show before, Jeff, is Flick 'em Up, where you're kind of a cowboy on a table and you use your fingers and you flick some bullets and you knock things down and around the world. And Ice Cool works in a similar manner. It requires a decent amount of table space, or we often play on our floor as a family. And it's ingeniously packed, where it just looks like a regular board game box. But as you unpack it, each part is then within it, and there's four little rooms that you connect together using provided wooden clips, and then it all folds down back into this nice box.
Yeah, so
and
the box is the game area. It's pretty clever. Yeah.
Yeah, and not giant. I mean, it still takes up a lot of square footage. It's not small. It's not small. And then the way the game works is one person is playing the role of catcher or defense, and the other characters, you can play up to four, I believe. You're playing these little penguins and you're flicking them. And in the rules, it shows you different types of flicks or like hits you can do to kind of scoot your character. But it's a flick as you try to navigate your character, your penguin, on this iced floor and go through certain doorways to collect little fish. And while the catcher tries to prevent that from happening by flicking their character to make contact with your character. And so you can play these really fun, heated 1v1. I mean, it seems silly to say, but it feels like playing a 1v1 first person shooter back in the day, where you're just in this duel with this person and you're running around the map and you know where they are and you know where they're trying to get, and you're trying to intercept them. And then it becomes more hectic when you play four players, because you still only have one person playing catcher. But you have the three people then trying to move through the doors, but they're also getting in each other's way as they try to navigate. And at the end of each round, you get points based on if you're the catcher, whether you hit the other players and how many times, and if you're one of the other players, how many of your fish, how many of the doors you successfully went through, either before one player collects all of their fish or the catcher hits one of the offensive players twice. So the rounds are fun. Everyone is always playing every round. It doesn't take a lot of time to flick. There's not a lot of analysis paralysis, and you kind of wonder which door to go through. So if you're playing with a group of adult friends in like a wine and cheese game night and you need a, you know, a breath of fresh air after playing an overly complicated game, Ice Cool is super simple to explain. The rounds are fun and fast, and kids also love it. And I found, pro tip, when people start getting angry and frustrated, play Ice Cool, because you're literally taking out your aggression in a contained, physical, flicky little way. It's a very active board game.
If you're frustrated by being crushed by giant Jenga pieces.
No, when you are crushed by giant Jenga pieces and all you have is your arm sticking out, you can still play Ice Cool. You can still flick around.
I recently tried to bring my family into a more complex board game. We play lots of board games here at the house, but many of them with my children are very simple. I mean, I've railed against Monopoly, not a fan of Monopoly, but I got to say the Bluey Monopoly is pretty good. Bluey Monopoly, not bad at all. They've refined the rules, very streamlined. Great for my five-year-old. She loves it. We literally played four times today. So there are a lot of games like that. We play lots of Uno. We play lots of stuff. But I wanted to sort of bring
Monopoly. Oh, sorry.
That's a big symbol.
It's a giant dog. That's a dog-sized dog. I wanted to sort of bring them into the more, you know, complex kind of hobbyist board games that I like. So I got a copy of Stuffed Fables, which is a game that is a big sprawling campaign and has a big campaign book, quest after quest that tells a big story, but it's made
ostensibly for kids. The idea is you play as stuffies. You play as stuffed animals. And there's this girl who falls asleep and she's kind of under attack. And you as her stuffed animals have to protect her from various nightmarish creatures. But, you know, it's not Alan Wake 2. Let me put it that way. It's, you know, it's there's danger, but it's for kids. And the idea is you'll pick a character. There's these various stuffies that you can select and they have different stats and different abilities. And you go through this story you have abilities that you could do and you have different actions that you can take. And each quest has a different objective and there'll be bad guys that pop up that you have to either fight or deal with in some way, and people you need to talk to and decisions to make. And it was going to be like this cool ongoing campaign that we were going to sit down and have family game night and do. And man, I got to say, it did not go over well. I don't know if it was on me of not ushering them into it, or it was the time of day that we tried it. I'd been wanting to get it to the table a lot, and you know, it'd been hard, and like, we all got to be focused and get in. And man, it did not. The first two quests, we did the first two quests. The first quest is very simple, very tutorial. It's just like bad guys show up on the kid's bed. You got to move around and vanquish all the bad guys before you can move on. And then the second quest, you get transported to this fantasy world and you have to do certain things. And it didn't go smoothly and everybody wasn't quite sure what they were supposed to be doing. And I feel like it was a real misstep. And I don't know if I should blame the game or myself, but I don't think that – I know that it came very highly recommended. A lot of people think very highly of this game. I think very highly of the designer. I believe it's Plaid Hat, who is one of my favorite publishers of games. They have a very high quality level. And the game itself is very high quality. The components are very high quality. The art is beautiful. There's a lot of cool miniatures in it. But it was a real miss for us. I have to say, it was not what I was looking for. It did not feel like it captivated. Maybe my kids are too young, 5 and 7. But I don't know. I would love to hear if people have had more success with stuffed fables than I have. Because I don't know if we'll get it to the table anytime soon. And it was going to be like our thing. It was going to be our thing. And I got to find a new thing. So there you have it. Tabletop time. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. You do know that we have our parting gifts coming up. So stick around for those, folks, because some interesting, fun recommendations. But Jan Ochoa, it's always awesome to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I always have a fantastic time. I learned so much. And oh gosh, I might go pick up poker again now because
it's a free demo. It's a free demo. It's free. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the awesome stuff that you do online.
You can find me on whatever they're deciding to call Twitter or X at @_JanJerome. But mostly you can find me at giantbomb.com. It's a website mostly about video games. But I host the Giant Bombcast, and we just announced that we're doing the Bombcast twice a week now. So find us on Tuesdays and Fridays. The Friday episodes we're starting to call Bombcast Revengeance. Why? It was just a silly idea that we had in a meeting and decided to run with it. Also, BCR just sounds cool. and yeah, more revengeance across the internet. Good revengeance, at least.
I love it. Congrats. That's awesome. It's you guys do such an awesome show, and it's amazing to get double the show. Double the show every week. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, I mean, we are... on this show's on Threads, which is DLC Hype Train, also on Instagram and on YouTube as DLC Pod. But it was on Threads where it was pointed out that we've entered into the fifth season of the year. Winter, spring, summer, fall, goatee. We are officially in goatee season.
Oh, boy.
It's
going to be a hard season this year. This is the hardest of the goatees.
I don't want to say that's why Bombcast is doing two episodes per week, but I'm also not going to not say that. I mean, I was in none of those meetings and I knew nothing about it, but like,
who's leaking this to you, Christian?
It's goatee season. You know what I mean? So
I'm just very excited for when Jan
tries to argue that Balatro's demo should be game of the year.
Anything's on the table now, Jeff.
I thought you were going to say when they cancel two episodes per week because Jan is playing Balatro.
It's very addictive.
And then I have a newsletter. I mentioned it earlier. It goes out about twice a month, where I write long form conversational pieces about video games. You can subscribe to it for free at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. This last one was about the all-encompassing, never-ending rise of subscription services and what that might ultimately mean for gaming and what it kind of currently means for TVs and movies. So folks can check that out. They've been fun to write, and people seem to enjoy them. So yeah, tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer is where you can find it.
You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And other shows I do include the Filmcast, which is about movies and TV shows. I do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns and a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show, all of which can be found wherever you get podcasts, across all the places that you find things. Check them out. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Jan, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah. Actually, the series finale, at least the anime version, of Attack on Titan came out. So
yeah.
It's been a long time coming. I love when a show just ends. You know, that doesn't happen enough. And yeah. Ends properly, I should mention.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
ends rather
a lot
than
of
just
shows have
stopping
ended.
Show.
Yeah. Yes,
show.
Yes. Yeah. Like to see a Vision go all the way through.
Yes. Yeah, Attack on Titan. I just heard that it's finally coming to an end. That's wild. Very cool. And where is that showing?
I believe you could catch it on Crunchyroll right cool. now. Yeah.
Right on. All right. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
The spinoff that's just starting, it's called Peace on Titan. After years of attacks, they finally resolve their differences. It was my oldest's birthday recently, and with her friends, we went out to a ropes course here in Southern California, something that she has done several times throughout her life, and my wife and I have done as well. And you should do one. They're great. And they're the type of thing that doesn't do it justice, because it's the type of thing where when you look on the ground and something is 15 feet in the air and you know that they're all secured, they have carabiners and they're locked in and it's structurally sound and everything's built better than I built a giant Jenga. And you look at it and you're like, no, that's okay. You're having fun up there, kids or adult person. Like, that looks really fun. But then when you go up there and you're 15 feet in the air or 20 feet, 30 feet, whatever it ends up being, and you still know you're securely clipped and you know that the thing you're standing on is secure, but it's still wiggling just a little bit, man, there are very few things that I think prey on my lizard brain quite the same way as a rope, as an obstacle on a rope. It's like we have this very simple path that's a little wobbly, and in the middle of it, we put a tire. Good luck. And I'm like, this is the best 4 minutes of my life. You just wiggle around this tire. It's subtle. It's easy. It's super fun. And it's not as death-defying as skydiving, which I imagine is similar. Like, you know that this is all safe in whatever, but like, ish. My God, still terrifying. Yeah, I guess skydiving is probably riskier. But look up, I bet you have a ropes course within a, you know, drivable area around you. They're super fun, usually pretty inexpensive. Highly recommend.
Well, now you got to play Jusant, Christian. That's
it's like, an logical step.
I would, but yeah. I want to play, I'd want a game like that in VR, and they don't make one. So
I have a recommendation for you, a parting gift. That is another animated show. So if you're done with Attack on Titan and you want the next thing, may I humbly suggest a new show that has just hit Max, the one to watch for HBO. It is called Scavenger's Reign. This show is mind-blowing. It's science fiction. The idea is this spaceship had a problem and people jettisoned from it and landed on this alien world. And this alien world could not be more alien. It is weird. And they're trying to survive. They're scavengers. I'm not going to spoil what happens, but it's very adult. It is made for adults. It has salty adult language. It is kind of grotesque at times, but my goodness, is it mind-blowing and cool. One of the cool – the animation is really interesting. The visuals, the way the alien world works and all of the sort of things that – the problems they encounter, this show is awesome. Scavengers Reign, highly recommended on Max, the one to watch for HBO. We've got a listener-suggested parting gift as well. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Chris from Commerce, Texas. Chris writes, I recently noticed that the Patreon app had updated. Lately, I've been using it to watch your show because that is by far now my preferred method of consuming your content. The visual style of your video presentations, as well as the fun retro theme that you have in the margins, makes it so much more fun to watch than listen to. I must pause and say, that's all Christian Spicer, ladies and gentlemen. Kudos, Christian, for making a fun
it's
video
the mustache.
Version.
It's my whole personality now. Just the mustache.
Just the mustache. Chris continues, however, for the longest time, the Patreon app was kind of abysmal to watch your videos on. If I picked up my phone, even briefly, it would completely exit the video, and I had to tap multiple times on my screen in a very tiny space to get the video to go back to the right size. Additionally, there were all kinds of notifications on my phone that would completely exit the video feed, making the app such a hassle to use. Well, those issues are no more. Quality of life updates have been made to the Patreon app that make audio and visual content so much more possible than they were before. And Patreon has completely revitalized the app to be audio video content friendly. Turning it sideways on a video now automatically shifts to widescreen. It acknowledges that's on CarPlay as a video audio app now, so you can double tap to go forward or backward. Different subscriptions are now organized so that you don't scroll in an endless feed to find updates. The app now consistently remembers where you left off in audio or video, and the tiling system is less confusing and more aesthetically pleasing, et cetera, et cetera. Tons of quality of life updates. Given that you're releasing YouTube clips from the show and may then end up with more subscribers who want to see the entire show, it's so nice to know that those subscribers will now be arriving to find an app that seems to be completely displaying the media they want to consume. Thanks so much for the great content, the great podcast, especially the video versions, and I hope you and everyone else will check out the Patreon app's revitalization. Thanks, Chris. Admittedly, this was a cool way for us to tell folks that the video version of the show is really fun and you can watch it. But thank you, Chris, for telling us that Patreon actually made it better. We Have Concerns. It's my other show. Patreon.com/DLCpod is where you can get the video version. And now it's actually very good to watch. So thanks, Chris, for telling us about it. All right. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. It doesn't have to be about us. It can be about anything. Send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Jan Ochoa and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for the great bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show at dlcswag.com. Thank you, Jesse J. Anderson, for that. Our biggest thanks, though, are reserved for our patrons who make the show possible. Thank you. And our Hype Train patrons are getting their own video games. It is time now, Christian, to talk about a couple of games. I know you remember, but some of the folks that we talked to don't quite remember some of these older games, like the JAD game. Remember the JAD game? Remember JAD?
I remember when the JAD speaker hat came out. I definitely remember the JAD speaker hat, but yeah, that was just more like recent. That was like branding and licensing. And the reason why they were able to make a speaker hat is because the idea, just the brand, the IP of JAD meant so much to so many people when we were kids, where everybody was like, oh, JAD's just a fad. And I'm like, you're just saying that because it rhymes, Timmy on the playground. Like,
yeah,
JAD is
or
a
as
lifestyle.
I like to call Timmy Lad.
No, I've created a monster.
No, I thought totally I was rad, always though. Under the impression that JAD was an acronym. You know, I remember it for a long time, they were, you know, remember Just Dance?
Mm-hmm.
Before that was Just Always Dance. Remember Just Always Dance?
I do remember MAG also, the massive action game.
Yes.
But what people might not remember is Just Always Dance.
Just Always Dance.
Which is it was a massive action game. Yeah.
Yes, it was a massive action. Well, it was a dancing choreography game, but also an endurance test. It was really quite intense.
I mean, now that we're here talking about it, I will tell you that I know I joked about him earlier, but my friend Timmy is still dancing.
Always, you must.
He has not stopped.
And I just was like, always is it a dance.
Fad now, Timmy? Yeah.
Who's the fad now, lad? That isn't to say that that was even you know that's the only game that we want to talk about. We got another game to talk about. You remember remember Josh Peak?
You mean the peak of 90s platformers? Yeah,
yes.
Of course. I remember the Josh Peak, because what I thought was really clever about it is, like, there are obvious, you know, we did puns around Just Always Dance, but there's also puns like the Beatles, you know, like,
yes,
also new Beatles song out, but like the Beatles, well, it's like peak, oh, you spelled it wrong. And now with Josh Peak, or then I should say, it was like, did I? Because yeah. It's both.
Yeah. Take a peek at Josh Peak, right? It was in
the pinnacle platformer. The literal
it was a
peak.
Pinnacle platformer. It was a platformer. Yeah. You know, Super Mario Brothers, Sonic, you would go left to right. Josh Peak, bottom to top, right? You ascend the peak. I remember it. I remember you get to the top of the peak in the final level, and you arrive there, and there's a flag at the top, and you pick the flag up, and you're like, Josh Peak. And that was the end of the game. That was very good.
Really good, incredible, like VO. You can tell they spent all of like the memory, the sound memory,
yes,
on the game for that. Like before, you had like Rise from your grave or whatever Altered Beast did at home, or like I'm a trap. Blah, 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 blah. And you're like, that's bad, Admiral Akbar. But like Josh Peak was crystal clear. It was really nice.
Yeah, but you only got it at the end of the game after like 13 hours.
Yeah, which Timmy never saw it.
Yeah, no, he never did. He was always dancing.
He never got there.
But yeah, we want to thank both Jad and Josh Peak for being longtime Hype Train level patrons. Thank you. I hope you enjoy your video game. And if you'd like to become a Hype Train patron and get your own video game as described by Christian and myself, head over to patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.